Welcome to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this is a very special reunion episode for a very special occasion. We saw Autechre live together on their current tour of North America. Though by the time we post this, they might already have started the UK leg, actually. But yeah, what better reason to dust off the old pod and catch up a little with everybody. Dan, you know, we recorded our last official episode, hilariously titled Bootlegs Part 1, back in December of 2021, and a short listener email episode a little while after that in February 2022. So where has all the time gone? Why did we stop? And what have you been up to?
Wow, I can't believe it's basically been 4 years. That's pretty crazy.
I know.
You know, when you're a kid, people always say like, oh, time flies when you're old. Mm-hmm. It literally does. It's annoying. But yeah, I guess since then, I've not been up to much. I got another dog. Mm-hmm. Got a new job. That's about it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess when we were, you know, the podcast was really, I didn't really like think of it this way, but it really was kind of a COVID thing. Like we just had all this.
I guess COVID was still going on in December 2021. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but like just sort of the length of the pod, it was like, that's what it was. So then once that, yeah, kind of began to slowly wrap up, I had started a new job. I had moved, you know, I ended up moving again. It was really just, it was getting a little overwhelming for me and like difficult to keep up with things. I mean, I think our last couple episodes were getting like pretty irregular because I was just struggling to juggle things. But I don't know. Now things have kind of settled down a little bit. I live in Atlanta now, which is, you know, why I was able to see Autechre in Atlanta, why you were able to visit me. We'll talk about that, of course. But yeah, I mean, I guess the big question is, over all this time, have you still been listening to Autechre as much as we used to, or do you feel like the podcast burnt you out a little bit?
I mean, definitely I haven't been listening as much because, you know, during the podcast, I had to talk about it. So I would listen to all the albums, you know, many, many times, but I still definitely listen. It's one of the things I put on when I read, cause I don't like words when I read, so I do that, and then, you know, of course, like the new live records and everything, which we'll get to, you know, I listened to all those, but definitely stepped back, and I probably took a few months off. I honestly can't remember 4 years ago, but, you know, I definitely didn't listen for probably, you know, 5-6 months.
Yeah, I was pretty burnt out by the time we kind of wrapped things up. I think I didn't listen a whole lot for kind of a while, And you know, also, I think you're in the same boat as me, right? Which is that my wife kind of hates Autechre.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
so
yeah.
she deserved kind of a break anyway. It's funny, maybe I'll mention it later, but I did make her come to the show with us. And she had to admit that, like, in person, the whole experience and the darkness, everything, won her over a little bit. Although, I mean, she enjoyed herself, but she did end up right at the end having to go into the bathroom because she was starting to dissociate. So Autechre can have that effect also. But yeah, I didn't listen for a while. And then it's funny because I recently moved and kind of like used that opportunity to really upgrade my audio setup. And so I have been using that opportunity to really revisit a lot of things. And so it was really just in the last, honestly, like, I mean, I've always kind of listened to Autechre, you know, like you said, it's kind of nice reading music and stuff. One of my favorite go-tos. But in the last couple months, I've been, you know, specifically really revisiting a lot of Autechre just because I want to hear it on my new system and, you know, hearing it, you know, how audiophiles tend to do, like in a way I quote unquote have never heard it before. But, you know, so I've been revisiting lately. It's funny because actually I've been, you know, like I was even listening to Draft the other day, which longtime listeners of the podcast will know we were never big fans on. And I was like, damn, it sounds pretty good, actually. You know, I wonder if part of me is tempted, like, yeah, I sometimes wish we could, like, you know, redo the pod and just like redo the whole discography, because I bet I would just feel differently about everything, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I was listening a bunch, you know, in anticipation of going to the concert, and I also ripped you off and bought the same stereo system. but because of, you know, my wife hates Autechre, it doesn't get played a lot on that because it's in the living room. But I got nicer headphones now, so I have listened through that.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. I tend to feel that every about 5 years, I feel like my 5 year ago self was wrong about everything, you know?
Oh, so, yeah. If you're not doing that, you know, you're not living. You know, what's Dylan say? You're busy being born, you're busy dying.
Yeah, there you go. So it's feeling like maybe I got to do a full run through the discography pretty soon here. But let's not bury the lead too much. I do want to set this up, though. And by the way, please keep in mind that we are going to be spoiling the current live sets for everybody who's, you know, still planning to see them soon and wants to go in blind. Come back and listen later. But to set this up, you know, I had never seen Autechre live before. So I bought tickets to see them in Birmingham, Alabama. You know, I live in Atlanta, but I actually kind of work closer over on the Alabama side of the border. So that's not so bad for me. So I bought tickets to see them in Birmingham, Alabama on October 16th at a fantastic venue, by the way, called the Saturn, named for Sun Ra, which is really cool. And then again the next night, where I met up with Dan in Atlanta at another fantastic and actually much bigger venue called Terminal West. Dan, however, had seen them before on their last North American tour, the one that became part of the first AE Live collection in Orlando, Florida, on, can you believe this, Dan? October 10th, 2015.
Yeah, almost like so, 10 years to the day.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of to set this up, like, what do you remember about that? How did that experience maybe affect your expectations going into this new show? And just starting to get into kind of high-level thoughts, did it end up being more or less what you expected, totally different from what you were expecting? What?
Yeah, from that show, 10 years ago, I forced my wife, girlfriend at the time, to go. So she did her duty, did not enjoy it. But that in Orlando, you know, I guess not as big of a Autechre crowd. It was kind of a small venue. It's called The Social, if anybody's familiar. You've been there a bunch. Like, how many people's that hold? You know, like 500, maybe not even. It's a real small place. And it's also not a place that gets very dark and stuff. So I sort of had like a, I don't know, like a half-assed Autechre live thing, I think, from Orlando. Hmm. But I didn't know that until Atlanta, you know, getting ahead of myself a little bit. But at that Orlando show, like, nobody was dancing. It was like really just like a lot of nerds that looked like me standing around. A lot of people, me and my wife still joke about this, a lot of people kept bringing up like decibel meters on their cell phones and seeing how loud it was. And that was about it. So my expectations going into Atlanta were sort of, you know, of the same. I had never been to Terminal West, and I kind of thought it was a smaller place than it ended up being. So I sort of expected more of the same. I was much more taken aback by the darkness. It was like actually dark at this show, which was, you know, pretty cool and really, really gave a whole different experience than I had 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, of course, everybody knows about the, you know, all the lights go off. Everybody's taking pictures of the, you know, the little warning signs that they post around the venue. Some people are keeping them, getting the guys to sign it and so on. Yeah, I mean, for me, I guess my expectations were a little bit colored by your experience and having heard about them and, of course, talking about it on the show, right? But I was, you know, kind of expecting, and also, of course, colored by, like, the other AE Live sets and stuff like that. And I don't know, I was expecting it to be, yeah, nobody dancing, just total dark, like, deep listening kind of stuff. Like, I don't know, and... It was just so funny because when I went to the first show I went to in Birmingham, or as the Brits would say, Birmingham, I guess, there was like such a weird mixture of people in the crowd. There were people like what you described. I mean, they kind of looked like, I don't know, Richard D. James or like Mike Paradinas or something like that type of person. But there were also like kind of high energy bros, sort of, who I was thinking, like, did somebody tell them this is going to be like an EDM show or something? And then there were even like kind of rave looking people. There was one girl with like the straight up, I mean, I don't know what you call it, but like that kind of like, you know, it's like an like a raincoat that you can totally see through or something, and then underneath it was like you know, neon colored, like, you know, bikini looking type stuff.
Like,
and
the girl in Blade Runner.
Yeah. And I was like, man, do these people know what show they've come to? It turns out I didn't know what show I had gone to, because people were dancing their asses off. I mean, it was like really high energy. And yeah, to just kind of keep talking about like overall thoughts, I mean, I was bowled over by just, this set started like at high energy level, it felt, and then just kind of kept picking up the whole time. I mean, very shortly, I was like moving. The darkness, I don't know, it made it like actually feel a little bit, I don't know, I thought it would just make everybody feel like they were in their own bubble, but it actually made me like a little less self-conscious to kind of like jump around and stuff like that. I mean, that was a big shock to me. I guess when we saw them together in Atlanta, we were actually a little bit further back, like more toward the mixing board for kind of like sound reasons. But did you also feel kind of surprised by just like the energy in the place?
Yeah, I mean, one, the crowd was a lot like bigger than I thought. And then, you know, there were some people dancing. I think it was a little stiller than what you've described in Alabama, but maybe because of the amount of people, you know, we were kind of packed in there. But, you know, there was definitely like, I could, I mean, it's so dark, but like you could sometimes see like little waves of you know, people kind of dancing and everything. It was a lot different of a crowd than I expected, honestly.
Yeah, it's interesting. And yeah, the other thing about, you know, the difference that I experienced between Birmingham and Atlanta was that Birmingham had like really quite a powerful kind of sound system, specifically on the low end. And it just felt like it was, you know, shaking the whole room, like sometimes relentlessly. I mean, we'll start maybe kind of trying to break it down as well as we can in our memory, right? But the first like 20 minutes of the set has this kind of like pummeling barrage of a low end. I mean, it kind of reminded me of like Feed One, like the first track from LSEC or something. Like, it's just relentless. And at Birmingham, it was, you know, it just felt like I was, you know, really getting assaulted by the sound system. Honestly, it was really loud. It was really heavy. It was really shaking everything. Atlanta, I mean, it might be part of just the difference in the sound system, but also the fact that we kind of stood back a little bit, but it was just so much clearer. And I actually kind of felt like it made for a nice compliment, because the first show felt very like physical, you know, very just visceral. Whereas the second show felt a little bit more cerebral, and I was really able to kind of like hear, I mean, a shocking level of detail. Did you kind of feel that way too? Like, the sound system at Terminal West was really good.
Yeah, I thought the sound system in Atlanta was really good. You know, like sometimes in the dark, it was like you could close your eyes and it felt like, you know, wearing the nicest headphones ever or something, you know, like just full detail. You know, a lot of times when you go to a concert, it can get kind of muddy and whatnot, and it feels a lot different, you know, once you listen to the soundboards, you know, at home or whatever. But this one like really felt like, and I mean, maybe I'll think differently once we get the soundboard, but it kind of felt like listening to that, you know?
Yeah, it really did. I mean, and honestly, it's funny because since we saw the show, I've been like kind of hearing, I've been listening to a lot of Autechre because it just put me in the mood. And I've just been hearing it in kind of a new light, because I can kind of imagine it like in that space at that volume, and it was just filling the whole room. I mean, I don't know, it just makes everything sound better that I could kind of like imagine it there now. But I guess we kind of haven't said just straight up, but did you like this set? What did you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we haven't really talked about the set itself, but yeah, I definitely liked it. I mean, I don't think I've not liked anything of theirs, but I really wasn't expecting it to be so like percussion heavy and so so energetic, you know, like you said, it just like it kind of started and I thought, you know, okay, maybe we'll have this for a little bit, you know, whatever, get to the droning and whatnot, and it seemed to not ever really come. It was just, you know, relentless for 90 or so minutes.
Yeah, I mean, just like, I mean, it was everything that I wish it could have been, you know? I mean, obviously for a very long time, I've like so wanted to see Autechre so bad. I mean, enough that I was willing to, you know, see them two nights in a row, and I'm getting a little too old for that, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was like, I mean, it was everything that I wanted it to be. And it was like the second night going to see them in Atlanta, I was like as excited because I just loved the sound of it so much. I mean, I think that I have felt, and we can talk about this more later, but I've felt like, you know, especially like the AE Live 2016/2018 sets, I felt like they were just kind of moving in a direction that like they were losing me a little bit. You know, they were kind of going in that, like, we talked about this at length, right? But that kind of like seated concert hall type of a style, like you're sitting here listening to like Stockhausen or something mm-hmm. like that. And I guess without really, you know, ever totally conceptualizing it, I like the kind of roots to dance music, like feeling just a little bit more connected or more obvious, maybe. Not that they're ever disappear fully, but so I was just like, I don't know, I was expecting something a little bit more experimental. I was expecting I would love parts of it and then feel like lost at other parts of it. But the fact that it just like grabbed me from the first second and just never let go of me all the way through, I mean, I was like so excited, so happy. I was really feeling like this is some of the best stuff Autechre's ever done, honestly. And I feel like that has been kind of the general response to this North American tour. Is that the feeling you're kind of getting as well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, same kind of way. I was really expecting and kind of hoping for that like Stockhausen real experimental sort of thing, but was pleasantly surprised to get like, I don't want to say like a throwback because, you know, it's nothing like Amber or something like that, you know, but it was like really you think like, how can they keep doing something fresh, you know, after mm-hmm. after all these years and going so far out and everything, you know, like what left is there? And it's nice to see that there is still somewhere, and that like I don't know, I think this was like a really good distillation of that classic, you know, IDM sort of feel and everything, and that experimental edge that we love for the past, you know, however many records.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it still feels trailblazing. And it was so funny because we could talk about this later too, but you know, the first opener when we saw them, but you know, actually both times, was Cygnus, who I don't know like how many shows he sort of did, but he, you know, he really went with this kind of like 90s IDM type of style. I do think it kind of like, it almost like had an Amber kind of a feel, but then started to get into like, I don't know, almost like Gantz Graff territory. It got like pretty wild. Mm-hmm. I really liked it, but it's just, and I'm not saying this like to criticize or anything, because I mean, I think it's really cool that Autechre invented this sound, that there is still more to like play with and do with, like, yeah, you know, 30 years later or whatever. But it just sort of added to that feeling that like, wow, yeah, there's a lot of people still doing what they left behind like decades ago, and they have been moving kind of forward like ever since then, you know. It really just kind of brought that into relief.
Yeah, totally. I mean, exactly, with the Cygnus guy, I mean, we talked about it at the show. Like, I enjoyed his set. I thought it was good, but it really was like, it's hard to say it in like a way that doesn't seem like we're putting it down, but it really was like what they had done 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, not everybody can be Autechre.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Kind of
no, exactly. Yeah. I don't want to get any emails, you know?
I know. No, shout out to him. But I mean, so were there any like parts of the set that really stood out to you? Is it just kind of like a blur? We're talking about a week after seeing them together. Can you remember stuff sticking out to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a week ago and just like such a pummeling thing. And I've purposely like still haven't re-listened to, I don't think there's a good recording of Atlanta yet. I was mm-hmm. looking through, I saw there's a couple like cell phone ones. So I haven't mm-hmm. re-listened to it or anything. So it's sort of hard to say like, oh, I liked this moment. I remember there was some like real R2-D2 sounding beeps that I liked. I think that was towards the end. Those like sort of like metal shard kind of things that mm-hmm. were happening like towards the last half or whatever. That was really neat. But you know, I'd be lying if I could tell you I could describe a chunk of the 90 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, well, I have like a kind of an advantage because I did see it twice sure. in a row. But yeah, in my memory, it's like, there was this first kind of part, actually we'll talk about this in a little bit, but this first kind of section is actually what you can hear if you listen to the end of like the Leon set, for example, from the recent 2022 Dash releases. It again, I compared it to kind of Feed One, because it really got into like really quite pummeling barrage type of low end sound. You know, something like, I don't know, it has this kind of like cool, like it almost felt like there was a phaser effect on the whole track or something. It just made it feel like you were, I don't know, getting like, you just whoosh through some like crazy tunnel of beats or something. But after that part, it enters what I think you're describing, which is, or at some point after that part, it enters this like kind of metal clanging part that was really quite like funky, honestly. Mm-hmm. And that part like just grabbed me immediately. And then it's crazy because from there it switched into like, honestly, a almost like four on the floor kind of almost acid-y like jam. And I remember at Birmingham in particular, you know, people were like dancing through the first part, but once that kind of happened, it just felt like it went off like a rocket. I mean, everybody like kind of lost it at that point. And then no matter how kind of weird and crazy it got for the rest of the set, they just like had the energy up at that point. So, I mean, that kind of, yeah, just middle part. I mean, just crazy. It feels like it starts at like 100 and then somehow goes like to 150 or something like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I said it. I expected it to deflate, you know, like to turn into nothingness or a drone or whatever. I like mm-hmm. totally did not expect it to get more energetic, you know, from that get-go.
Yeah, and then the ending is really interesting too, because it does sort of like mellow out, but it kind of keeps this groove going. And that sort of struck me. I don't know if it's like, maybe it's just an effect of the different spaces or what, but I felt like the endings had like a distinctly different feel between the two shows I saw. At the Birmingham show, it really kind of mellowed out, but it stayed kind of like groovy. And at Atlanta, it felt like a little bit more spaced out. Like it was like kind of magically, I don't know, I was like really getting lost in it. Like I just really liked the kind of atmospherics of the end. And but it, you know, it's so short that it didn't really feel like we were entering any kind of ambient passage or anything. But I also really liked about Atlanta that there was like a part where you could kind of hear it like started kicking in again, and then they like clearly decided to kind of wrap it up there. Like you like heard like the beat going, I'm like, oh hell, are we going back, you know? And and then it kind of like mellowed back out. But definitely, yeah, the ending was like a real highlight. So, you know, sort of zooming back out, I want to ask how you think this current set sort of fits into this current like AE 2022 dash project, as well as maybe even Autechre's like larger discography. But first, let's go back and forth on some background information that I typed up.
Back in the day, we did a whole episode on the first AE Live batch, documenting the slowly evolving 2014 to 2015 set, which kind of became LSEC, released in 2016. And we also discussed AE Live 2016-2018, a lot of which became NTS4, released as part of the larger NTS sessions in 2018. What we haven't talked about on the pod is those current AE22-dash project, which started as more live recordings, originally titled AE Live 2022-dash, but which has clearly become Autechre's primary focus.
Yeah, indeed. Over the past couple of years, the guys have had this to say. Quote, I'm honestly not that interested in records anymore. The concept of what a studio album is seems outdated. For instance, if I create a track on my laptop while on a train, does that qualify as a studio album? No one would know it was made there. If I use my laptop on stage, does that still count as a studio record? It's different because there's an audience, but if I'm in the studio with friends while making a hip-hop album, is that an audience too? These terms become confusing. They've also described the current set as actually one enormous set they just keep adding onto. Back in 2023, Sean said it's, quote, about 4 hours long so far and growing steadily, and called it, quote, the most interesting thing we've done in ages from our point of view.
Fan pages on aepages.org have actually mapped out how all these sets fit together, including the sets of the current tour. For example, Milan is a version of set A, covering tracks 1 to 12. Venice is a version of set B, picking up at track 9 and pushing on to 25. Sydney, set C, covering tracks 21 to 34. And the celebrated Leon set is a version of set D, covering tracks 36 to 51.
And that means the current tour has brought us to set E, if you want to call it that, covering roughly tracks 49 to 62, though they've played set D on a few occasions too, usually when they're playing two sets on the same day. Anyway, we might want to consider doing a proper episode on the whole project, but since we've just seen the most recent component of what is, for all intents and purposes, the new Autechre album, quote unquote, you know what I mean? What could this tell us about where they're at right now, where they might be heading, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, I think where they're at right now, it's back to energy and percussion. You know, we've talked about a lot of people sort of loathe the demise of drums in Autechre, and those drums are back, back with a vengeance. So I think that's where we're at now. We're back to drums.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I don't want to like step too much on, you know, what maybe if we, you know, I don't know, depending on the response to this, like if maybe we want to do a couple more episodes, but like if we were to kind of break down this whole AE 2022 project, you know, it definitely, yeah, returns like sort of percussion to the fold, but it does feel like, you know, it does feel still quite like the earliest sets released in this are like still a little bit, I don't know. I would almost compare them to like the feel of like a boat rocking or something instead of, you know, as heavy as this set E has gotten. And honestly, I don't know. I'd have to revisit like the whole sequence a little bit more, but
yeah, same.
It does feel like it is increasing in energy as we go to the point where this like set E that we've just seen on this North America tour is like really, I mean, going crazy, like firing on all cylinders. It feels sort of like the culmination of, you know, what would be, I guess, like 4 or 5 hours of just straight buildup, you know, but it's crazy how really, I mean, it's, if this is one giant piece as they describe it, then it's really quite a percussive, I mean, not that much melody at all, really.
Yeah. I mean, if this is like one giant piece, like they say, and you know, the thing we read about Sean saying how he doesn't like albums and all, isn't the album what like sets it in stone, you know, puts the frame around the picture and says, this is it. So like, what will be this, you know, giant 4 hour track, you know, like, do you take the best versions of tracks, you know, whatever from these shows, you know, what, like how does that become a thing?
I know. It's interesting because everything he's saying suggests that he kind of likes, they both kind of like it, like in this amorphous way that like they're never going to record like the album versions, and that what you'll have instead are like all these various sort of configurations. And what you'll sort of be able to do is like make your own supercut where you'll be able to like match up maybe your favorite version of set A. It never actually like kind of like the transitions wouldn't be, you know, perfect, obviously, because sometimes they kind of go a little longer, sometimes they sort of stop a little earlier, whatever. But you could still kind of pick like your favorite set A, your favorite set B, so on and so on, and you would have like just this huge supercut. But yeah, it does feel like in the past what they would have done is eventually kind of set that stuff in stone somewhere, and we would have like the piece or the set A. I mean, they act like they're not going to do that. Do you still wonder maybe if like they will kind of like do the thing? Cause I feel like the NTS sessions was basically like this, but they just sort of decided this is the version, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like that one feels like, you know, I mean, calling it NTS and everything and playing it on the radio, it seems like it's like, they act like it's not an album, you know, but
yeah,
I think the community all consider it as an album. I would like something like that because I do think just leaving it fully like amorphous is a little, I don't know. I like there to be like, this is the version. But then again, I mean, the Grateful Dead, we've talked about it, you know, like Autechre has become the Grateful Dead with all this live stuff and all. And like Grateful Dead, the live version or the studio versions mostly suck, you know, for most of the records. So maybe this is a good idea and maybe it's fine. I don't know. I don't have the answers.
Yeah, I mean, and that might be the difference because I actually would maybe need to like double check this, but in my memory, I was like attached to the record versions in the past, and then they would release all this live stuff and it would sort of feel like, you know, additional opportunities to explore that era and how they got to the album mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. Whereas this is obviously the opposite order. So even if they were at one point, and again, I'm kind of thinking that they purposely don't want to do this, but if they were to at one point, like, let's sit down, let's do the whole 6-hour piece or whatever, and that'll be like the version, even if they were to break it up, right? That would create a problem in which certain people have probably become attached to certain versions of these things. And if they release one, it might not live up to everybody's version. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a dangerous yeah. game releasing the live, like, how did we get here before releasing the thing? So it almost feels like they can't do that.
Yeah, that's true. But I do think, like, besides, I mean, people listening to this podcast and stuff, like, people that care too much are listening to the live thing. But your average, you know, Joe Blow, is he going through AE 2020? And I think that might be, and maybe they don't care, but maybe that is like a little bit like, you know, someone who, I don't know, maybe there's not a lot of people that like Ottekker and aren't that into music, but, you know, like, just if you see like, oh, the new Ottekker record came out and it's getting good reviews, you check that out. But people aren't going to see, you know, AE 2022 batch, you know, D got set out. But maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's also funny because I think this is honestly kind of the coolest idea I've ever heard. And yet they're releasing it in as obtuse a way as possible that will guarantee that almost nobody ever hears it, like, mm-hmm. or appreciates it at least. Because I think what they've basically done is like AE Live on steroids, because AE Live was sort of exciting because you could listen to this set like evolve from night to night, and you could actually hear how each night they were sort of like pushing it a little bit further into the unknown, and it sort of created this, like, there was something exciting about like, okay, we're reaching the end of the set, like now we're going into, you know, improvisatory territory and what could happen, you know. And they have basically done that, except for there is, you know, so far, like, 5 different AE Live sets that have kind of, like, that are results of that pushing on. You know what I mean? So you kind of get the fun of AE Live, where you get to listen to this thing evolve from night to night, but then you also get to pick up at, like, a later time and push it on further and kind of hear where it goes. So it is, like, so cool. I honestly feel like it would work better if, like, if they released all of these things divided into tracks, let's say,
yeah,
then anybody checking it out would realize, like, hey, wait a minute, this show starts like halfway through this one and keeps going on, you know, this one starts at the last track of that other one, you know, so I could sort of, like, they would be able to visualize like how it all fits together. But as far as I can tell, the only way, like, I didn't even know that until I found this AE Pages thing, which is like just a miracle. Whoever has been putting work into this is like, I mean, just a god, honestly. but it's like, I think if they somehow explained what they're doing, like, in a more public way, this could be seen as like just a monumental achievement, you know?
Yeah, I mean, totally. I think, like, I don't know, maybe they just don't care, or explaining it might kind of kill the fun of it for them a little bit, you know, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would even take like a this is the live album, for, you know, like, release all the tapes, you know, the Dick's Picks, but then here's the you know, Without a Net for whatever year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and, you know, even the, like, for people who may not know, right, if you go to this aepages.org, like, even the current shows are here because people have kind of listened to fan recordings and shown kind of with this big chart, like, how they fit into the overall set, like, where they pick up, where they end. Another thing that I'm kind of curious about is that what we're not seeing on this set E, although maybe it's like just not clear yet, is, I guess, usually the stuff they've released has been like basically one set and then there's like one or two examples of the next set, you know, and that mm-hmm. tends to be kind of like the fan favorite, like the Leon, right? It was, up until this tour started, that was our furthest glimpse at where this goes. And now these sets are picking up where Leon ends and actually kind of going farther than that. But I am not seeing anything on this tour that like goes farther than set E. Do you feel like, because of the energy of this set, like, we might actually be reaching the end of this project, or do you think they're going to keep carrying on?
Huh? Yeah, I don't know. That's a good point. Cause you're right. Like, there isn't sort of the next thing. I don't know, like, it makes sense to end something, you know, in a big build up and whatnot, but mm-hmm. but also that seems maybe a little normal for this kind of a thing. I don't know. I think they're the only ones that know that for sure.
Yeah, it's just like it is so high energy that I don't know, like, you know, what would you do from here? Like, basically, mm-hmm. it feels like over almost 6 hours, this thing kind of builds in intensity. It goes from like kind of a slowly rocking, kind of creaking thing with the set A and gets up to like, I mean, just the wildest intensity. And then what do you do? Do you just start heading back down in intensity and like maybe kind of arc it back up 10 more hours from now? Or like, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, you kind of get yourself in a rut there, I think, because you can only go so high. So you got to go back down, yeah. You know, it kind of puts you in a loop.
Especially the fact that they are on this whole set. I mean, like I said, I think melody is far, far lower on their list of priorities than like rhythm and texture and sound. You know, there mm-hmm. is just not a lot of melody here, which, you know, this always, like, I think frustrates Odd-Tekker fans, even myself, because it's like, if you go back and listen to the early records, they write some of the most brilliant, beautiful melodies like you've ever heard, and they just don't do it anymore. So that could be an interesting twist. If, like, what if after this percussive onslaught, they start to shift into something more melodic all of a sudden? But because I bet they can still do it, but maybe that should be a different project then, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when do you like demarcate this is a new project too? Do they just like, does this become 2022-2025 and then we start 2026 mm-hmm. or you know what?
Yeah. And, you know, he said something, there was another comment I meant to include it in this write-up, but he said something like recently about, we could keep doing this for 10 more years. And I don't know if that means like we could keep, like, we have so much material right now, we could like tour it for 10 years, or we plan on continuing riffing off this thing for 10 years to come. I mean, it's very, very tantalizing, but I mean, at a certain point, I do hope they wrap it up, you know, and we kind of put some sort of bow on this project, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I like this, like, ever evolving. I mean, again, like the Grateful Dead, they always said it's all just one long show or whatever. You know, I sort of like that, like, this is an actual realization of that in some mm-hmm. sense, because, you know, like the Dead, that's kind of bullshit, actually, you know? but so I kind of like it, but also, you know, I think you do. So part of me, once like when you create a piece of art, you do have to say like, okay, now it's finished. If you don't ever say it's finished, it's a little bit cheating, I think.
Yeah, I guess just to like sort of move on. I mean, my feeling is like this would be a phenomenal end to this mm-hmm. project. I think like this kind of set. I don't know. I would have to like really revisit it, but it, you know, I would be tempted to say like this is easily one of the greatest things they've ever done. Like this kind of amorphous, never-ending song, but like that, you know, that it does go somewhere and it does arrive somewhere. I mean, I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask as sort of a side question. Like, I have seen multiple people comparing this current set, the set E, to Untilted. Does it feel like a bit of a throwback to you? You said like percussion is back with a vengeance, but does it feel at all like, you know, familiar territory or just purely new territory?
I mean, again, I only listened to it once and I haven't mm-hmm. listened to Untilted in kind of a while because that's not one of my favorites. But I don't think so. I never felt like during it, like there was any sort of retread or anything. You know, like when I say like percussion's back, I just mean that like they're back to using drums. I don't mean it like they're back to using yeah. the drums they used, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, on Untilted or anything like that. Like I don't know. I don't think that anything felt, you know, a retread. I saw in that, I was reading through that AE Pages he sent me, they said there's like a sound from Bass Cadet on some of them,
yeah,
or whatnot.
Yeah.
So maybe there was a little bit, but I didn't notice it.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that comparison because of the like percussive onslaught nature of it. And Untilted is one of my favorite AE records, period. It's probably the one I revisit the most, maybe that and like Choristus, but especially because they've been releasing, you know, they've been reissuing. Well, actually, it was like they reissued and then they came to streaming for the first time, some of these Choristus like versions.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, Untilted, I absolutely love it. And so that might even also like go to explain why I was like so pleased by this set, because it does have that feel. Mm-hmm. I will say though that I think Untilted feels a little bit more like on speed than this did. Like Untilted feels like it literally can't go fast enough, you know, whereas this has like a real heaviness to it. Like it's not even fast so much is just like
it's heavy,
mm-hmm. big, you know? And yeah, I just cannot, I will never forget like how that the Terminal West, it's like, it's quite a high ceilinged place. It like used to be some kind of factory or something. And it just felt like it was filling this entire thing. I mean, honestly, like there was a person standing behind me that my wife was like asking me if he was okay. He might've had Tourette's or something. I don't know. Like he was like shouting stuff and I couldn't even hear it unless I like really tried hard to focus, you know. It didn't even bother me at all because it was so like all consuming, the size of this sound, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is like that's the part that the darkness works in favor for. I'm not sure that I 100% love the dark thing, but it definitely like it definitely helps it in that respect.
Yeah, why not? Why do you say that?
I don't know. I've seen them twice now, but I literally don't think I've actually seen them. I couldn't tell you who was standing, you know, where in Atlanta or anything. And there's some impracticalities to it, you know? mm-hmm. When people would try to go to the bathroom and things, it got a little annoying. Also, if you're going to go to the show, please put your phone away and don't turn the screen on. Very annoying. that happened a lot in Atlanta, and that was annoying. But I don't know. Do you think like I could see somebody like thinking it's a little gimmicky? Do you feel like that at all?
I don't know. It felt like gimmicky, but like a gimmick that worked almost. I mean, it felt like you know. I mean, yeah. When you describe it, it sounds kind of corny actually, but it does make them feel very mysterious. It makes, you know, you just see like the faintest laptop light on the stage. You know, it just feels like, especially after, you know, seeing some openers and stuff, you're like, okay, these are artists, and now Autechre are gods, you know. It has that like just crazy feeling to it. I don't know. I liked it. I mean, it just basically, I think, sort of forced me to like, I basically just shut my eyes the whole time, and I thought that was kind of nice. I mean, I could like, you can still feel the energy in the room even when your eyes are closed, you know. And so I don't know, I honestly feel like about music and movies, that like concert music, that it should be so loud that the most annoying person is not even going to bother me at all, you know what I mean?
I agree.
The dark almost like helps with that. So, I mean, before we start to wrap this up, I wanted to, because we haven't talked about this, we haven't talked about Autechre or like had a, you know, obviously we've hung out and stuff, but we haven't like had like a sit down podcast type conversation in such a long time. I wanted to have kind of a side conversation about AI, if we could. You know, back when we were doing the pod, there was no AI in the sense that people are using it now, right? Like referring to these large language models like ChatGPT and stuff. And of course, we were endlessly fascinated throughout the podcast at Autechre's use of like algorithmically generated sequences and sounds for like improvisatory purposes. You know, now that we live in this kind of AI world, do you feel like a little less fascinated by that now, maybe even like turned off by it? Because I'll say, I don't know if we've ever even talked about AI honestly, but like I am an educator, and so AI is the bane of my goddamn existence. You know, it is like the most annoying plagiarism machine. Basically, it does have all the like kind of scam, you know, energy to me. Like it's the same people that were trying to sell us NFTs are now trying to sell us like the revolutionary qualities of AI and stuff. And so I don't know. Do you find that affecting the way you listen to Autechre now?
I don't think it affects the way I listen to Autechre much, but I mean, just in general, AI, I do IT. And so it also can sometimes be pretty annoying, but I mostly, it's okay if you use it as like a way to Google things a little easier, mm-hmm. you know, like look things up and all. But I do agree, like, you know, the plagiarism problems and all, you know, just the absolute slop. Like I could do without all that. Yeah. But I don't think it like bothers me in regards to Ottecker, because they aren't like, if anything, they wrote it, you know, like they, right. they made the algorithm that is controlling, you know, like doing whatever whatever the hell's going on those laptops, you know, like they wrote it. So it's not, I don't think it's anything like the same as using any of these like commercially available ones, you know?
Yeah. It's just like, you know, yeah, obviously they set the parameters and they design everything. So it's not like a plagiarism issue or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wonder if it'll, I've just found myself sort of like preliminarily thinking about it, because I used to be sort of, you know, just amazed by like wondering like, yeah, how does this work? Like, what is going on here? And now I feel like it's a little easier to imagine.
That's true.
And it's like, I don't know. I just think like maybe it's not as important as I used to think it was. I think it's just like, it's literally for them a way to be able to, you know, you can't necessarily improvise electronic sounds. Like that's something that electronic music struggles with, mm-hmm. you know, to kind of have that like improvisatory feel. And they basically just figured out a way to do it. It's just, I don't know. It's just interesting that in a way, like the world sort of caught up with Ottecker on this. And I wonder if you'll see more artists doing that, but of course still nobody will be Ottecker because the ideas are still them.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, if you think about like their whole career, you know, they started with physical hardware, and then at some point, mm-hmm. you know, that moved to a mix of the two, and then now we're in what I imagine is, besides samples, all, you know, on the computer. So, you know, maybe like, do you go back to analog, you know? Do you create whatever's after AI? I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, if we were to continue kind of doing this podcast, I feel like that would be like, that would radically change, I think, that conversation that we had, like, you know, over and over again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, you know, before we do kind of sign off, can we talk a little bit about the openers? We mentioned Cygnus at the start of this, which I thought was really, you know, really cool. But I was especially, I mean, I was really taken by Mark Broom. Now, I was like mildly disappointed. Mark Broom kind of did this DJ set, and I think what, you know, for me, what was such a treat was he threw in like a lot of tracks by The Tuss, which is like, I don't know, Richard D. James' most obscure, you know, project. Where, you know, so I don't know, it was just cool to like hear that in like a live setting. But when I first saw him in Birmingham, he threw in a lot of hip hop, and I just thought that was so cool because he was kind of like effortlessly sort of moving between like really gritty hip hop and then, you know, really kind of, I don't know, like noisy electronic, like kind of glitchy electronic type music and stuff. When we saw him in Atlanta, it was a much like techno heavier set. Honestly, like the BPM was getting so insane. I was like still delighted by it, but I missed the hip hop for sure. But yeah, what did you think of the openers?
Well, first off, when I was looking through that AE Pages, Cygnus opened that show I saw 10 years ago, too.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. I honestly, I don't remember it at all, but that's pretty cool. I liked him. Mark Broom was really great. I didn't see the Alabama set, but you told me about it, and I was like sort of a little disappointed, too, because I like hip-hop a lot, but I thought it was fun, you know, like I've seen a good amount of people on like Reddit and stuff complaining that it went on too long. And,
really?
Yeah. And I didn't really feel that. I mean, you know, I'm old and my knees were starting to hurt a bit, you know, so I could have shortened it for that reason. But I never was bored by it. I thought it was like a really like sort of, you know, hyping you up. I was like real ready for Ottecker by the time mm-hmm. that was over. You know, I thought it was a good... you know, just like a trip down techno lane, you know, getting you ready for what's coming.
Yeah, I didn't, I forgot to mention, but the Birmingham set was crazy because, so I live in the Eastern time zone. Of course, Birmingham is in the Central time zone. Also, the venue, for some reason, had like an hour late start time. Like, doors weren't even till 8 p.m., which I feel like is usually, you know, showtime, mm-hmm. right? So it was, you know, for me, it felt like it was 2 hours later, you know, than basically it was. And by the time the show ended, I mean, I guess it was like, for me, feeling like, you know, after like around 2 a.m. or something. And it was so funny because it was like, I really felt like at some points during that set that I was like fading into another dimension. Like it felt so late. It was so dark. It was so sweaty. Like it was just crazy. But yeah, you know, yeah, I loved Mark Broom both times. I mean, I'm a new fan. I don't know if I even was aware of his work, but like, I just like loved his sets so much. But yeah, that Birmingham set was like especially fun because he ended with ODB's Brooklyn Zoo, and I just felt like everybody was like shouting it. You know, it's just really, really fun. So, anything else we should cover regarding the show, our experience? I mean, it's fun. It's fun having you visit.
Yeah, yeah. It was, you know, it's always fun. I'm starting to like Atlanta a lot. I've been up there a couple times now. So it's a real nice city.
You know, it's funny because I always, every time I would go to Terminal West, which I go to a lot, it's honestly like the closest venue to my house. That is where they recorded the first AE Live, you know, in Atlanta. And, every time I would go there, I would think, wow, Autechre were in this room. You know? And now I've seen them in the room that they were in. Yeah. So, you know, what's next for us? Should this just be a one-off? Should we do more episodes? It's been like, yeah, 3-4 or 5 years almost, as we discussed at the top here. We mentioned at the top that I sometimes have this, this urge to like go through the whole discography again, because I'm sure I disagree with absolutely everything I said in the back catalog. I remember we used to talk about like, should we move on to a different artist? I mean, at the very least, should we like catch up on these recent live recordings? I was thinking it would honestly be kind of fun to do like an episode on each set, like set A, you know, deep dive, set B, deep dive or something. Or what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that would be fun. I also, like, after taking some time off from pod, you know, it's sort of fun to get back into it, especially I used to work in radio and now I don't. So it's, you know, it's nice to kind of, like, I haven't had to set up microphones in a while. I enjoyed that. I wouldn't mind going through the whole discography again, because same way, probably feel completely different. But also, I mean, the going through the live set thing does sound kind of fun, because I'll honestly probably do that on my own either way.
Yeah.
Especially once these ones get released.
I know. But it's so funny because, yeah, just like even after seeing the show, I was like reading about, you know, this, and I had listened to like the 2022 Dash sets, but like as a casual, not as a podcaster,
yeah, same,
you know, and
same.
So I was like not so deep into it. And then I started like researching and reading, like, how do they all fit together and like all this stuff. And I was like remembering how kind of fun it is to like listen at this, you know, extra level of like, I have to do a podcast about this, you know. I've really just been a normie for like the last 4 years, and you know, maybe it's time to go back to patrician status and like really, really deep into it.
I will say it is nice having like a structured listening. I sometimes like, yes, when we don't have the pod, sometimes I find myself like, you know, just listening to old records I already like and everything. So it is nice like forcing yourself to listen to something that you maybe don't know everything about.
It is, and I feel like sometimes, you know, like our listeners enjoyed that kind of structure of like, okay, I got to listen in preparation for the podcast, you know, as well.
Yeah. It's a fun thing to listen along. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think it'll honestly kind of just depend on what you guys think out there, listeners. You know, write us gunkspod@gmail.com and, you know, let us know. I don't know. Do you want to hear more? Like, what would you want us to do? You want us to do the discography again? You want us to do the AE Live sets? I don't know if we get a lot of, I don't know if we just get crickets. I don't even know if anybody's subscribed anymore. If nobody yeah, even listens to this, then maybe we won't carry on. But if we hear some positive response, maybe we will do a little more. I agree. It would be fun. And I feel like at this point in my life, I'm not so busy as I was that I could actually maybe get back to it. But yeah, let us know. Gunkspod@gmail.com.
Yeah, I'm always not busy, so just let me know. All right, so yeah, let us know. Write us gunkcastpod@gmail.com, because yeah, I guess it'll depend what the people say. And just in case we decide to get things going again, help us out by subscribing, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you next time. Maybe.
See ya.